Next on BYUSN, Cougar football back to the 80s. Part two. This time we begin with the magic of 1984 and race through 1989, a five-year span that included, of course, a national championship and finished with the emergence of quarterback great Ty Detmer.
You'll hear from legendary quarterback Robbie Bosco as BYU wins the 1984 national championship.
It is BYU football back to the 80s, part two. We're ready to go. Let's do this.
Seeing the birth of a new star, perhaps, in their passing albums. Robbie Bosco, a junior from Provo, hometown product, taking over here for Steve Young, who's since departed.
Kyle Morrell really timed that play perfectly.
Who picked up the mantle of the phenomenal Brigham Young quarterbacks. Robbie Bosco, and his name to the Nielsens, the Wilsons, the McMahons.
BYU Sports Nation back at it with BYU football back to the 80s, part two. Marty McFly, eat your heart out. Today's show presented by the BYU Store, official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere. I am Spencer Linton alongside Jerem Jordan.
We had a ton of fun last week doing part one of this, 1980 through 83. Now we get into 84 through 89. BYU's going to win a natty. They're going to be almost... with the guy with the Heisman. I mean, this is a special time in BYU football history.
Let's begin with the magic of 1984, a BYU football masterpiece. The Cougars, remember, just 8 months earlier had concluded the 1983 season where they finished with an 11-1 record. Their two highest final ranking, or their highest final ranking, I should say, in program history at number 7 in the AP poll, beat two teams ranked in the final top 20 on the road. Yet, Jeremy, entered 1984 unranked, but had to replace the All-American Steve Young. So that's probably why the pollsters didn't buy into BYU.
Gordon Hudson at tight end. Todd Shell was a first-round pick at linebacker. So BYU is walking into a season going, we got some good players, but how good are we? It typically depends on the quarterback. They couldn't possibly keep this string of great quarterbacks going from Scheide to Nielsen to Wilson to McMahon to Young to the next guy, Robbie Bosco. Who's this Robert Bosco guy?
Hey, unrank this, okay? All BYU does is run the table. They go 13-0. Perfection for the first time in BYU football history. And according to both major polls, undisputed national champs. You have a problem with BYU winning the 84 national title? Take it up with the pollsters in both of the major polls.
It was disputed by fan bases of opponents, but the voters did not dispute it. Pretty awesome. BYU opened the season at number 3 Pitt. 2009 vibes later, right? Playing Oklahoma. Pitt was really good coming into the season. BYU unranked. This is the first college football game that is live on ESPN. They used to do taped games. This is a live one. The Goodyear blimp was there. It felt like a big deal. BYU pulls off the upset despite being down in this game at the beginning. It was a big time comeback and dramatic finish with Adam Haysbert winning it. And Robbie Bosco and the Cougars start off with a massive win to open the season.
Well, fast forward action right here as you talk about Haysbert catching that unforgettable touchdown pass to get into the end zone.
Brother of Dennis Haysbert, if you didn't know.
Hey.
Fame. State,
fame runs through the entire family, for
exactly.
Sure. President Palmer's brother, you bet.
Yeah.
Adam Haysbert at BYU. Massive win for the Cougars. And yes, while Pitt was not great at the end of the season, this was exactly what BYU needed to launch themselves into the rankings and get on the map early in the season.
It was big time, and BYU had to come back in this game. But you talk about the offense. BYU didn't need a ton of rushing yards in the 80s. Time of possession, got destroyed. It didn't matter. BYU comes back and wins this game and beats Pitt, and they start the season off nice. And now the pollsters are like, okay, look at BYU. Because at the beginning of the season, no one knows how good you are or how bad you are going to be in the case of Pitt. Pitt was number 3 at the time. They didn't finish well, as you mentioned, 3-7-1. It's not BYU's problem. They went and won that game to open the year.
Sure. And Pittsburgh got banged up through the season. They had some key injuries that certainly played into that. However, like you said, BYU took care of business and did what they needed to do to catch the nation's attention. Robbie Bosco went into that game feeling anything but great.
Yep.
Really, really tough place for him the night before. We'll hear that story from him coming up in just a little bit. Now, a few weeks after BYU upset Pitt on the road, then Kyle Morrell makes himself a BYU legend at the defensive back position. One of the greatest plays in BYU football history on the road in the islands at Aloha Stadium. The timing of his leap and front flip over the line to prevent a Hawaii touchdown on the goal line could not have been more precise. This is probably, and forever probably will be, the greatest defensive play in BYU football history.
It's not probably to me. It is the best defensive play. And I think if we did a poll or a bracket or whatnot, I think BYU fans would agree. Pretty incredible. It doesn't save the season in the moment per se, and you don't realize it because BYU still is behind and they have to go take the lead later.
Sure.
But they win that game 18-13, and if Hawaii scores a touchdown there, maybe BYU loses.
It's probably over. I mean, you ask
anybody
on the 84 team, they'll tell you, had Hawaii scored there, we're not sure we could have overcome that.
And it was big time. You have to have certain moments and special things happen for you because BYU benefited, as we take a look at the schedule, from a 5-0 record in one-score games. BYU won every single close game. You talk about Pitt. You talk about Hawaii, as just mentioned, versus Wyoming, Air Force, and then you have to go off the screen to the bowl game against Michigan. To be great, you have to win the one-score games. Also, make one-score games not one-score games by blowing out fools.
Find a way.
But look at, like, Wyoming right there. Sometimes you always think, oh, no, if they were great, they blew everyone out. It does not work that way. Like, sometimes a team will have a bunch of blowouts. Sure, the BYU did. You have to win close games. You're going to have weird weeks on the road. BYU took care of business. 5-0 in one-score games.
You find a way to win even when the ball doesn't bounce your way.
Yes, and opponents lost in a timely manner to pave the way for BYU. So November 17th.
Oh, it's only fitting that this happened after BYU beat Utah.
Number one, Nebraska lost to Oklahoma. Number two, South Carolina lost to Navy. BYU jumps up to number one.
Both monumental upsets.
Huge. You got them right away, late November, and now BYU's number one in the country, and they were able to win the last couple games and hold out and win the national championship.
So BYU ends the regular season with a record of 12-0, and they take on football blue blood Michigan in the Holiday Bowl. The Wolverines, they too were banged up. Entered the game with just 6 wins, but it's still a motivated Michigan team. You don't think they wanted to end BYU's chances of a national championship? Come on. Michigan had everything to play for. The Cougars made some big plays. Robbie Bosco, through an injury, came back onto the field and rallied BYU to a 24-17 victory to end the season perfect. 13-0 and the only undefeated team in the entire country.
A note about Michigan. At one point in the season, when Jim Harbaugh was the starting quarterback, they were ranked number 3 as well, like Pitt was earlier in the year. They got banged up. There were other opponents that were going to potentially play BYU in the Holiday Bowl. It's not BYU's job to choose the opponents or how good they are. You just got to beat those teams. So that's what BYU did, and they won another close game.
And we look at those numbers. Like, had BYU not turned the ball over 4 times... they win this going away, convincingly. Turnovers kept this game close.
And I don't care how close it was. Just win the game. And BYU did, and they had to wait a little bit, a couple weeks, and then they find out they actually, yes, are the national champions. It's not like today, which we'll get into a little. What would it look like if it was a 4-team, a 12-team back in 84? Who would BYU have played? We'll have some fun with that.
Well, Bryant Gumbel's issue when he said the following, how can you rank BYU number one? Who'd they play? Bo Diddley Tech? Not BYU's issue. Take it up with the voters, Bryant.
What do you have against Bo Diddley, by the way, who's a musician? That's so funny.
The voters. It wasn't just one poll. It wasn't a split national championship.
Right, which
both
happened.
Major polls said that BYU was the clear number one as the lone unbeaten team in the country.
And we've talked about this on the show, and you've mentioned this, is you don't just show up and go undefeated and get to be number one.
No, a long, successful road built up to this.
Like what Boise State did in the 2000s is what BYU originally did. BYU was the original outsider to build up to this. You talk about going to the Fiesta Bowl in 74, going to the Tangerine in 76, 79, you're almost undefeated. Newly created Holiday Bowl. BYU's in that every year as the WAC champ. 80 and 81, you're going 11-plus wins. You're 11-1 in 83. The table had been set. If BYU was able to win all the games and the right teams lost, they had that chance, and they took advantage. Nowadays, now that BYU's in a Power 5, you can make that happen. It's harder in a Power 5. But BYU's not on the outside looking in anymore, which is fun. they changed college football forever with a championship like this. They started to make rules to prevent said championships by outsiders
from
like
a team
BYU.
Like BYU doing this again.
So that's why it will never happen in the same way. BYU took advantage of when they were, win all the games, number one, natty.
I love that it disrupted everything. And to your point, it was a long, consistent build for BYU. Not just one undefeated 1984 season that created this magic for the Cougars, but the past success of those previous seasons you just talked about gave BYU a ton of cachet nationally. Remember, the Cougars had earned that respect after one loss season in 79, a one loss season in 1980, only two losses in 81, and only one loss in 1983. And they were finishing all of these seasons in the AP top 15. So BYU was very much on the radar. So when people say, how did BYU randomly win the 84 title? It's because it was a long, consistent build.
It wasn't random. They won all the games. They were the only team to do so. BYU's lucky that they were the only team to do so. Again, you need skill and you need some luck.
And for they got greatness some luck.
You had both. Thank you to Bo Diddley Tech, Brian Gumbel, whatever. So 84, the greatest season in BYU football history. Amazing. Okay, 1985. A lot of the same guys come back, and BYU has another tremendous year. Number 10 in the preseason poll. They end up being 11-3 this year. Randomly play 14 games, which is fun. Beat Boston College in week one. Extended their win streak to 25 games. Spence, BYU's never going to do that again. That was incredible.
Sorry, we're beyond that era.
Hardly anyone does it. Like Georgia did something recently. Beat Washington in week three, which was one of those teams that argued against BYU in 84. So it felt like this kind of, all right, who really was awesome last year kind of game. Robbie Bosco finished third in the Heisman, back-to-back years. All three losses by one score. Like, BYU was very competitive. The UTEP one is certainly a shiner, where allegedly UTEP tapped into the radio frequency of the headsets and could hear the plays.
UTEP
we'll ask Robbie about
historically
that.
Bad. I believe it was their only win of the season.
That's a terrible
so
loss.
So how did they beat BYU? Well,
did they cheat?
There are many that think they straight up just cheated.
El Paso, weigh in.
Jeff Grimes, do you have an opinion on this?
Is he on that team?
I believe he was on that UTEP team.
Oh, wow.
The 1985 BYU team has a case as one of the most underrated teams in BYU history. In fact, many players on the team felt that the squad and the roster was actually more talented overall. In 1984.
Hey, I love the 84-85 guys. You can't lose three times and be one of the greatest teams. Like, if they had lost once, maybe twice, I think we'd have that conversation. But three losses is tough.
It sets up the next three
seasons.
It's
a tough schedule, too.
For sure.
Yeah, UCLA, Ohio State.
Frankly, 85 was a clearly tougher schedule than 1984 faced.
The reason you win all the games in 84 is because it was a little easier. But again, that's not BYU's fault.
The next three seasons, expectations are at an all-time high for BYU football. And you understand why. You just won a national championship, and then 10-3 was disappointing in 85. So BYU's in this new stratosphere of expectations, and you look at what the Cougars did from 86 to 88, and now you start to understand, like, why 9 wins and 8 wins was like, meh.
But they didn't win the WAC, so they were certainly disappointed. That was the first goal, Spence. Win the WAC. And then you move on. So if you don't win the WAC, it's a disappointment.
Sure.
And the best and worst thing to ever happen to BYU is winning the national championship. The best is because you won it. The worst is because you think you can still do it. Like, we can do it. No. It's much harder now. Let's make the 12-team playoff in the Big 12 right now. This year, we're talking about making a bowl game, Spence. We're not talking about winning a natty. You certainly want to get to that level. Like, the way men's basketball is recruiting, it's like, oh, can you recruit that way in football? Can you get some of the best talent? Can you compete at that level? The answer is yes. BYU will be in that space at one point of making the 12-team playoff I'm talking about. And then if you can make a run, who knows?
The one thing that also brought some real concern for BYU fans, and frankly the staff from 86 to 87 and those seasons specifically was, okay, we've had this string of elite quarterbacks, and then there's a little bit of a gap because Bob Jensen had some flashes, Sean Covey had some flashes, but it wasn't consistent, and there wasn't an NFL guy until this little dude from Texas comes in who's, 150 pounds soaking. Okay, he's more than that, like 170 pounds.
I don't know that he was.
And 6 feet tall.
What? 5'10", bro. He's shorter.
Ty Detmer leads BYU to a Freedom Bowl win over Colorado at the end of the 1988 season, and Cougar football is back in business in the quarterback position.
We've got to read the quote from LaVell Edwards when he first meets Ty Dillon.
Yes.
Okay. When I heard about Ty before he came to BYU, I thought he'd be a big, strapping John Elway. Instead, he was a 145-pound Pee Wee Herman. But I'll tell you one thing, that Pee Wee Herman could play football.
He certainly could sling
it. Hilarious.
He certainly could sling it.
I love that. So, tequila!
Ty Detmer put BYU back in the quarterback game and helped BYU again get to another prominent national level. And
they didn't know they could go up.
A WAC championship.
For an individual at quarterback, given the string of guys, it's hard to imagine that someone could elevate that, but they did. So we go to 89. This is redshirt sophomore year for Ty Detmer, ranked number 19 in the preseason poll, 10-3 record, finished number 22 in the AP poll. Ty Detmer finishes ninth. So, okay, you're back in the top 10 Heisman thing. He's getting top three votes, right? First 10-win season since 85. So it's been a little bit of a lull, an apostasy, if you could say, a restoration of great quarterback play. And now we're cooking with this guy going into his junior year.
WAC champs. WAC champs
for the
first time in a while.
You're
back in that game for sure. One of the clear highlights from that 1989 season was BYU drubbing Utah 70-31. BYU put up 750 yards of offense in one game.
Here's to doing that this year.
It was 40. They scored 49 points in the first half. Wild to watch BYU destroy the Utes that way. A memorable win in that rivalry series for sure.
And BYU wasn't just producing elite quarterbacks like we were talking about. How about two Outland Trophy winners in this period at the end of the 80s? 86, Jason Buck. So Outland Trophy, best interior lineman. That can be defensive or offensive. So Jason Buck, D lineman, 86 winner. And then 89, Mo Eluenibi wins it on the offensive line. Both consensus All-Americans. These guys are fantastic and bruisers on the line. That was awesome.
Think about BYU in these nationally prominent award conversations. The Cougars were consistently, through the 80s, putting quarterbacks in the top three of the Heisman race.
Davey O'Brien winners, Sammy Baugh in there.
Yes, winning all the major quarterback awards. And then you have two interior linemen, one on each side of the ball, coming from the same school, and it's BYU? That is crazy. Like, these things that BYU was accomplishing, it's going to be near impossible to replicate it in the current state of college football.
Jason Buck's story of severe poverty to the Outland is incredible. And then a dude named Mohamed Eluenibi going to BYU, winning the Outland. Super cool to have those guys win those awards in the 80s. Pretty awesome.
Fun to recap this. We have much more in a loaded show still on the way, including a chat with the quarterback who led BYU to their only national championship. Back to 1984 with Robbie Bosco. Why he was in tears the night before his first collegiate start. This is BYU Sports Nation.
We were ranked number one. I'm like, we have a chance to do this.
Bosco back to pass. Look, throws for the end zone. Touchdown! A minute 30 to play in a ball game. Campbell throws it. Touchdown!
I knew that I could do the job.
Welcome back to Studio B. This is BYU Football Back to the 80s Part 2 alongside Jerem Jordan. I'm Spencer Linton. Our pleasure now to welcome into the Cougar Council Room for a look back at 1984 specifically and a little bit of 85, the great Robbie Bosco. Robbie, welcome.
What's up, Robbie?
Good to be here. Thanks, guys.
Okay, let's start with the super easy task of replacing Steve Young at quarterback.
How easy was it, Robbie?
Oh, it was too easy. I don't know why I wasn't playing before that. So it was like, oh boy, that brings back some crazy memories. I never felt like I had anxiety in my life, but I had anxiety. And it was crazy because, you know, when you're out there to practice and I was a backup and things like that, no big deal. And then when the time came, I just, the anxiety really came into my life. And I remember the night before we left to Pitt, I literally started crying. And I did not want to go, thinking, "I how am I going to do this?" And I going back to Mark Wilson, to McMahon, then to Steve Young. Because Mark is the main reason why I came here, is because I saw him play on national TV, And he threw, I think his first three passes were
for touchdowns.
The
San Diego State game.
San Diego State game.
On ABC.
Which was amazing. I was still in high school, obviously. And then, to see all the records, all the wins, the championships and all that, thinking, okay, here's my turn. And I'm like, how? How are you going to be able to compete with any of that stuff? And so, you know, people talk about the pressures from the fans and stuff like that. I don't think anybody puts more pressure on us as QBs than we do ourselves. So I was just, I don't know what I was expecting, but I was really freaked out to go to that game and play. And because it was super hard. I remember Steve Young and Gordon Hudson would interview me after most practices when they were playing. And just say, hey, we're going to prep you for when
you're messing around.
Just messing around.
Yeah.
And they'd be like, okay, roll it. And Steve would ask me a question. And I'd literally be like, I can't do that. I don't know what to say. So everything was really new to me and everything like that. But it was not easy to pass with.
How'd you overcome that to settle into what wasn't a great start into the Pitt game? You've talked about it. And Lavelle gave you confidence, right, to stay in there. And
you think you're going to get benched.
Right?
Yeah.
You pull off this huge upset over number three Pitt to start the year on the first live game on ESPN of college football.
So it was crazy. Even the ESPN thing was a big deal. The Goodyear blimp was a huge deal to players. Like when that blimp was at your game, you were like big time. Then the first live televised game, and I'm like, man, these guys are ranked number three. They have a great team coming back. Well, I don't know how good. Not only did I know how good our team was going to be, I didn't know how good I was going to be. So my first three passes were a literal nightmare. And so I remember the first play, I was supposed to put Kozlowski in motion. He goes in the slot. Well, he took like two steps and I snapped the ball already. I mean, I snapped it way too early. And then I threw a pass that I remember Mark Bellini just looked over his head like, I can't even jump that high to get that ball. Then I think I hit Kelly Smith in the back of the head and Adam Haysbert in the legs. And so I was a little bit depressed. Like, I knew I couldn't do it. I just never felt that confidence yet. As I was walking off the field, I see Lavelle walking towards me. I'm like, oh boy, he wants to tell me something not good, not in front of everybody. And I was really shocked. He put his arm around me and he said, look, you are the quarterback. Just relax. You've done it in practice. You know how to do it. And just go out there and play your game. Don't look over your shoulders. No one else is coming in to replace you. And so I felt a little bit of confidence.
But Blaine Fowler was like breathing heavy over your shoulder. Like, oh, yeah, I'm right here, bro.
He was looking for his helmet, I'm sure. And so I look back. I watched that game last year, the whole game again. Mm. And I really played. I thought I played horrible. I didn't play very good. It didn't look very good. And this is like 35 years later. Mm-hmm. And so it was just really weird. And things didn't start clicking until the next game against Baylor.
Interesting. I was just going to ask, at what point did you feel like, okay, now I've truly settled in. I've handled the anxiety. I am the guy, and this won't affect me anymore. Yeah. What was that point? Or was there a specific moment that you can recall where you felt that clearly?
Yeah. I don't think I ever got over the anxiety. I mean, I tell you what, before every game, it was just like, you just took deep breaths. And it's just like everything. When you first start a game or whatever, you just have those butterflies and things like that, which I think is a good thing. But we came into Baylor. My back was a little bit banged up. We kept it a big secret. First time I got tackled, they're just squeezing it as hard as they can. I'm like, how do people find out this stuff that you're injured? So anyways, we go into that game, and we felt good. I still didn't know how good I was going to play. Practice is one thing, but the games where it really matters is a big deal. And so after that first half, I threw five touchdown passes, and that was it. I mean, I felt like, okay, now I know I can do it now. And I know our team's really good because Baylor was the only team that beat us the previous year.
That was a big game
Steve's
for that
first
team.
Game, yeah. His senior year. Baylor won like 48-47 or something like that. And so, but after that, I felt more confident going into every game, and I knew that I could do the job.
At what point in the 84 season are you realizing, hey, this is a special team, and then certain dominoes start to fall to get you up to number one late in the season?
Honestly, for me, feeling that way was way down the line. Because if you look back, there are probably three or four games that we could have lost like that.
Hawaii and Wyoming come to mind.
Hawaii, Wyoming, Air Force was 30-25. And it just wasn't easy. People don't understand. They always complained about the conference you're in and stuff like that. But people don't understand when you have a target on your back. Because I think we've won, I don't know how many consecutive games in the WAC at that time. So everybody wants to beat us more than anything. And so that was probably the hardest thing. And, we just went out there and did our job. But it probably wasn't until we were number one that I thought. Because even when we were number three, two teams ahead of us that were pretty good, we just got done beating Utah. And as we come out of the locker room, the game's over, and everybody told us number one and number two just lost. So we waited until the polls came out. We were ranked number one. I'm like, we only have two games left. So that's, for me, that's when I thought, we have a chance to do this.
Then comes the Holiday Bowl. I mean, you had to finish off Utah State, which you did. You handled the Aggies rather easily. And now you're undefeated going into the bowl game. But there are some stories out there about teams turning down invitations. We're trying to set the record straight. So from what you remember, who did BYU try and contact to get to play in the Holiday Bowl that turned it down before you ultimately ended up playing against 6-5 Michigan?
Yeah. So they tried to get Washington to play. And honestly, they turned it down. And it couldn't have been too big of a money issue because back then, I don't think the bowl games, they were paying a ton of money like they pay now. And so we're like, look it, we're going to give you guys an opportunity to play the number one team. You guys are ranked number two. And come play us. See what you do. Now, we were in the Holiday Bowl. And I think they were playing in the Orange Bowl against Oklahoma.
Right.
Was. So I think to
ties
them,
for the conference,
those are the two best teams in the country. And they thought, no, this is going to be a better for our program to play in the Orange Bowl than it would be in the Holiday Bowl.
Was there an option of playing in a different bowl game, or was we won the WAC, we are in the Holiday Bowl no matter what?
We were in the Holiday Bowl no matter what. And we had the contract, and so there was no getting out of it. And it wasn't until the very next year in 85 that they switched that up, and then we went on and played in the Citrus Bowl that year.
Did Michigan end up being kind of the second option then out of the Big Ten? I assume the champ went to the Rose Bowl that year. And Michigan that year had been ranked as high as number three. Jim Harbaugh breaks his arm. Yeah. They kind of go downhill a little bit.
It's interesting, though, and people never look at all the stuff. But at the beginning of the year, I think they beat a really good Miami team, Michigan did. And they had a super good team. And they got a lot of injuries. Quarterback was hurt. Harbaugh didn't play in the Holiday Bowl, but I think they had almost all their other players back. Mm. I'm telling you, they were very good. They were a hard-hitting team. They were just like what you think of a Michigan team.
A Bo Schembechler tough team.
Yeah. I know that one of the first plays, I threw a corner route, and they had an outside linebacker who was 6'4". And a corner route, you're throwing the ball down there about 25, 30 yards. He picked it off. I'm like, where'd that dude come from? That dude's an athlete. And so they were good, but you can't talk to anybody about that. But it was a tough game, and honestly, we had some we had some turnovers early. We felt we probably should have beat them by two or three touchdowns anyways. So,
well, you rally. Everybody wants to know what happened to me. What was the injury, Robbie? Do you know what the specific injury you sustained was in that game?
I try not to make it bigger and bigger every time. But honestly, I felt super good going into the game. So I was healthy. I remember throwing an out route to Cause, and our right tackle got beat a little bit. So the guy came in and hit me down low, which I don't think that was too much of a bother. But then as he rolled on me, then he just kept rolling. He had my leg and my ankle situated, and he kept rolling on it like that. And so it just kind of, it tweaked it. So that ended up being a high ankle sprain. I had a little bit of ligament damage in my right knee. And then, this probably didn't happen then, probably a little bit later, but I had some cracked ribs. But the biggest pain was my ankle sprain.
Yeah.
So typically a high ankle sprain, to heal it completely, you got to let it go about 2 or 3 weeks and not do anything on it. Not 2 or 3 drives. So anyways, so as I'm on the ground, you know, I'm not thinking much. I go, oh, that hurt, but no big deal. So I go, just get up. So I tried to get up, and I couldn't put any pressure on my foot. So I went back down, and then they come out. I said, just stay down. And so they looked at it a little bit. They go, let's go in the locker room and look at it. So they brought me in the locker room, and they were tweaking some stuff, looking at some stuff. And I said, look, can it hurt any more than it does now? Will it hurt my career for next year or down the future or whatever? And they said, no, that it shouldn't. So I said, just tape it up as tight as you can go, and we'll see what you can do. So as I walked out the tunnel, it was really awesome, and it really uplifted me because I could hear the fans just cheering. Like, here, there he is. Like, they're watching down there and to see when I'm going to come out. So I went over. I go, I got to get warmed up again. I'm going to do some drops, plan on it, and see how it feels. So when I first did that, it hurt. It hurt the plant on that foot. And I wasn't sure if I could do it or not. So our trainer brought me over to the table, took my shoe off, and just wrapped it more. And then wrapped it over my shoe and just wrapped it super tight. And so then I went up to Mike Holmgren, who was on the field calling the bringing the plays in and out. And I said, okay, I'm ready to go. He goes, no, are you sure? I go, yeah, I'm ready to go. So I just went out. I went out, Blaine came out, and you know what? I think if you've been through a game and you've played on adrenaline, it's amazing how much that kind of, you can do it. You can just do it. So it felt good during plays, and after the plays were over, it kind of felt a little pain going.
Yeah.
But I just wasn't going to miss that game no matter what. It's too big for the school, for our team, for the fans, and for everything.
You had to get back in there, and you did, which was awesome. And do you guys switch the shotgun or something? You suddenly change?
We did. That? And so we never practiced the shotgun.
Oh, never even practiced?
Never even practiced it. And I remember the only time that we went under center was when I did a quick handoff, which should have been a little sign for the defense to know that. But I think one of the first times I was in shotgun, my cadence wasn't even normal, and I wasn't even sure what cadence, how to call a play from the shotgun. And so during the little cadence, they were going to start blitzing now, which I thought was good because we had everything planned out for blitzes. And so I had to change the play at the line of scrimmage. And so I think he just snapped it before I could get the whole play out. But I put Kelly Smith on a hot route because they were bringing everybody on that side. And so it hit me right in the stomach, and I wasn't even looking. So luckily it was a decent snap. So I just grabbed it and flicked it out to Kelly, and we were able to make a play.
Good job, Trevor.
Then I told Trevor, I go, Trevor, listen to my hut, and then we get the ball or my go. And so after that, we had no problems with it. And, you know, they tried blitzing a few times, but we had everything built in, so they really couldn't blitz against us. So we were ready to go.
When did the reality of what you and BYU football actually pulled off in winning a national championship as a non-power program set in for you?
Well, a couple times it did. I think after we scored the touchdown to go ahead, our defense went back out there. Marv Allen intercepted a pass. So we were just running plays to kill the clock. And so after that last, when that scoreboard went to 0-0, I remember hugging our tight end, David Mills, and just saying, we did it. We did it. Can you believe it? And so, but then it's not like the national championships now. So now we had to wait like 2 weeks before New Year's Day came. And so there's kind of a bit of a lull. Everybody was home. We weren't all together. And then I remember my dad waking me up in the morning. You guys are number one. So then the phone started ringing, started doing interviews, and it was just insane. People all over, Sports Illustrated, Sport magazine.
Sure.
It was just crazy.
It's a good thing Stephen Gordon got you ready for those interviews.
There you
Bobby.
Go. There you go. Without that, I would have never been able to do that either.
That's the part that's funny about this is it wasn't like you guys were watching a show and then you find out, or it's not even on the field. Like, you celebrate that you won and you think you probably did, but you don't know. Also, there's a couple of polls. It's not like now where it's pretty consensus, right?
Yeah.
And there's an outlier like, oh, UCF won the Natty in 2017. Whatever. It's not the same. And it was the newspaper, and it's your dad, which is great. 40 years later, 40-year anniversary, which I'm very excited to watch the show that you hosted, Spence. You were there, Robbie, of the 40-year anniversary. What's been some of the best fallout from 40 years of winning the national championship?
Well, I tell you what, you know, we probably have had a 10 and a 20, and then that's 40.
Now it's 40.
And very few teams have all those, but, you know, you're talking about a national championship in football. So we've been able to get together a few times. And it is just, it's the best. Kind of the inside stories that nobody hears about, we talk about those stories. The non-football stories that we talk about with each other just bring tears to our eyes, not because they're sad, because they are just hilarious. And some of the things that went on, but what happened in 84 and then meeting in 94, 2004, and now, things don't change. Can't take it away from us. We did what we did. We probably changed the landscape to that point of college football.
Certainly.
And what they're going to do. And the best thing about that is it's a team championship. It wasn't one person. It went down from a walk-on to the starting tight end to the starting QB. Everybody on that team, coaches involved, included, staff, all that's included. And it's just something that people to this day will continually come up to me, how does it feel to do that? What was it like? And so it's awesome.
All right, the great Robbie Bosco up next. Take a closer look at just how quickly BYU climbed the polls in that run to a national championship in 1984. Not surprisingly, after you beat Pitt, you hop in. But how quickly did they get into the top 10 and the top 5, of course, ending at number 1? We'll discuss that next on BYU Football Back to the 80s.
BYU Sports Nation is presented by the BYU Store, official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere.
Welcome back to a BYU Sports Nation special. It's BYU Football Back to the 80s, Part 2, here in Studio B. And to better understand how the 1984 season unfolded from a pollster's perspective, if you will, it's worth looking at the BYU ascension up the rankings on a week-to-week basis. And hey, even a drop in the rankings at one point. That's an overlooked fact that BYU actually dropped at one point. It wasn't a steady rise the entire way. But here we go. At number 3, Pitt, BYU was unranked, and they were the only unranked to national champion team until Auburn did it again in 2010, led by Cam Newton. It doesn't happen often, but you jump up to number 13, after beating number 3 Pitt on the road, then destroy Baylor, and after 2 wins, Jaren, BYU's in the top 10 at number 8.
Let's go. And then there were 2 drops after wins, which is pretty funny. You beat Colorado State? Nope. You beat Air Force? Nope. But you beat Wyoming, you go up 2. It just depends what happens that week a little bit. What was your margin like, and so on and so forth.
So the close game against Wyoming, the 41-38 shootout in Provo.
Up 2, baby.
But did it give them that after they beat Wyoming?
Went from 7 to 5.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
That's so interesting.
Which is wild. It fluctuates. But in the end, BYU ends up number 1. Okay, so that was the first 8 weeks. Let's look at, weeks 9 through 13. And BYU continues to climb. Okay, we're in the top 5 now. Let's go. 4-4-4-3. 1-1. You get those losses in a timely manner by the teams ahead of you, and then you hold serve, and BYU wins the national championship. Once BYU got in the top 5, there was a chance, man. Look, at New Mexico, every game, you got to show up. UTEP, San Diego State, at Utah. Utah State is the last game of the regular season, which nowadays would be super weird. But back then, that happened sometimes, and BYU wins the Natty. BYU didn't play just one game.
They didn't play just one game as the number one team. Like, again, another oft-overlooked fact that BYU was number one and beat Utah State, and then they were number one and beat Michigan. So, hey,
awesome.
They're there. It was there. They were number one for a few weeks.
Yeah,
right?
They enjoyed the entirety of bowl season as number one, going into and out of, and ever since. Pretty awesome.
You got an issue with it? Take it up with the pollsters. I'll say it a billion times.
I don't think our audience is the one watching. Or our audience doesn't have an issue. It's
clip it off. Send it out to the social media masses and some rival fan bases.
Also, if not, it's been 40 years. What's your problem? Get a therapist. No. What a season. One that will probably never occur again. The one where BYU wins every single game. If BYU makes a run to a national championship somehow in the future, it will require a loss or two in there. But because I say that, because it's just too hard in a power league.
Just get in the playoff.
Get in the playoff and win some games, and you got a chance, of course.
Speaking of, after the break, we take a close look at what a four-team playoff and maybe more would have looked like in 1984.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. We're going there. This is BYU Sports Nation, back to the 80s.
It was unique and very different from the other years. You know, the culture. LaBelle started it.
LaBelle's one of a kind. I think he was a father figure to all of us.
You have guys that just stepped up every time.
Kelly Smith still scoring in the end zone to secure a perfect season for BYU. Welcome back to our BYUSN special. This is BYU Football Back to the 80s Part 2. The Cougars 1984 National Championship on topic again. And while it has caused some strong dissenting opinions from notable national broadcaster Bryant Gumbel, legendary football coach Barry Switzer, and some other notable personalities.
40 years ago.
BYU's unprecedented title is locked and set in eternal glory. That said, when we were planning the show, we thought, what if we could have appeased all of these arguments against BYU's schedule and resume and let the Cougars settle it on the field in a four-team playoff? Well, here's what that playoff bracket would or could have looked like in 1984.
Mm.
The number one seed BYU matched up with the four seed Washington, and then a 2-3 matchup between Oklahoma and Florida. And I know some of you are out there saying, well, technically Florida was ineligible for a bowl game, so it shouldn't have counted, but you know what? We're throwing it out. They were the third best team in the country, according to the pollsters, so we're putting Florida at number three. We did our research. We know. So this is what a or could have looked like as a four-team playoff. Jeremy, what do you think?
That would have been really fun. The BYU-Washington game did happen in 1985, and BYU destroyed Washington. But this would have been fun to play that game, because it's one thing to play Michigan, and you play them to a close game. Can you beat one of the big boys? You advance to the title game. BYU would have had a chance to prove that. BYU did beat number three Pitt earlier in the season. Pitt didn't end up being good, as we mentioned. But this is what the matchup could have looked like. Washington at 10-1 out of, the pack at the time, 10. And then the AP rank,
which is what we're going off of. It's not like Washington's strength of schedule was out of this world good either.
No. Scoring defense was really good for both. We kind of don't talk about how good that defense was in 84. Scoring offense, obviously, for BYU, pretty stinking good. That would have been a fun matchup, man. That would have been a fun matchup.
I wish they could have played the game. There were a bunch of rumors out there that BYU was trying to entice Washington to come play in the Holiday Bowl and be like, look, if you don't like it that you're ranked behind, come play us. Come and play us in the Holiday Bowl.
Yeah, they wanted to play in the bigger bowl game, and I get that. You know, Holiday wasn't big enough for him at the time. That would have been fun. Let's assume that BYU moves on. Oklahoma and Florida. Do you have a preference on who Oklahoma or Florida in the matchup as we take a look at these two teams?
I would have liked to see BYU play Oklahoma because Barry Switzer was the head coach.
Yeah.
He was the one, again, that was outspoken. Like, and his team was ranked number two. They lost to Washington in the Orange Bowl, and their national championship hopes were effectively done at that point. But he was outspoken. So, yeah, I would have liked to see BYU beat Washington and then beaten Oklahoma. And then, really, you can't, like, there's no disputing. Like, it's over. It's done. It would have been fun to watch BYU play those two games.
Thank goodness there are no ties in college football. It's just dumb and weird to see 9-1-1 on there. Florida had an incredible strength of schedule. Like, the SEC was really pumping, scoring a bunch of points, both really good scoring defenses. It's not like Oklahoma's strength schedule was, like, out of this world either at 37. But certainly, if BYU was in the same spot as Oklahoma, and it was, you know, name your team.
Boise State.
We'd be complaining too. But you got to win all the games, man. And you didn't win two of them.
Oklahoma lost to an unranked opponent on November 17th. So just win that game. And they had a tie, too. Win that game.
You could have won out, and then you win the national
championship. You win the game, and Oklahoma
even with
the
tie. Yeah, even with the tie.
So they're going to be ranked number one if they don't lose to a team that is unranked and had a losing record at the time. So just take care of your business. You know what BYU did? They took care of the teams. They found a way against teams that they should have beat. They found a way.
We acknowledge that the schedule wasn't that tough. But again, you just win the games that are in front of you. This would have been so fun had this actually existed, to have a four-team playoff. Now, the four-team playoff is going away starting this year. And in a couple years, 12 is going to go away. It's probably going to...
So the four top teams get a bye, which is what's going to happen for teams in 2024. If you're good enough to be one of the top four, you get a bye.
But if you're the higher seed, you get home games, which would have been fun to have. If you're the five seed... Is it that bad? You get a home game, like home site.
Sure.
Someone's going to play a December game, in Maryland. Or, sorry, in Nebraska. That would be terrible weather.
Yeah, how about Tom Osborne and the Cornhuskers as a sneaky five seed right here?
Oh, they ain't sneaky. Maryland at 12 is like, what?
You beat Nebraska beats Maryland there, and then maybe Nebraska is beating Washington in a neutral site bowl game, and BYU could potentially match up with Nebraska in the national semifinals.
I love the possibility of Boston College, because you're playing them the next year.
In the kickoff class?
So you're playing them like two of your next three or four. But also Oklahoma State. There was some heck to pay there with 74 and 76 bowl losses to the same Cowboys squad. Remember, this is 84. This is not that far removed from that. It would have been nice to play them in a meaningful game and win to avenge the losses by an injured Gary Scheide.
Sure.
And then Gifford Nielsen there in 76. That would have been fun.
The bottom half of the bracket. Man, Blue Bloods, Ohio State, and LSU matching up in the 6-11 game. The winner, I know, Florida ineligible for bowl games, but the winner there takes on the Gators, who were from a very tough SEC. And then the 7-10 South Carolina SMU winner gets Oklahoma there. But
how about SMU? This is a couple years removed from the Miracle Bowl. Still a good program. Death penalty hasn't set in quite yet.
Yeah, 4 years before the death penalty erases the program. Yep. Think about the prospect of BYU facing Oklahoma State and Washington taking on Nebraska and Ohio State facing Florida and Oklahoma and SMU.
I can imagine it, because it's happening this year
in
college football.
It's amazing.
Let's hope that BYU at some point, we're talking modern now, is in that 12 spot or that 11 spot to have a chance to go on the road and play a 5 or 6 seed and pull off an upset and be in the playoff. That's the end game of the on-the-field stuff for BYU football. Obviously, off the field, you're developing human beings and working on all the greatness that happens there in the classroom and whatnot, and so on and so forth. But this is going to be fun, and this is a fun look at what that could have looked like, as we would like to think that BYU could run to the title. They would have earned it. If you win this, you earn it, man.
You would had this been in play, you would have had to win 15 games to win the national championship. If you're BYU, because you're 11-0 going into your bowl game, you have to win 4 more games, and you would need 15 wins to win the national championship.
1, 2, 3. Just 3 more, right? So 14 for BYU.
Well, sorry, if you're one of these teams, 5
if
through 12.
BYU in this case would have had to go 14-0.
Yes.
Yep.
That is wild. And there's a scenario now in our day and age where you play 12 regular season games. If you're one of these lower seed teams, you have to win 4 more. 16. You play 16 games.
It's actually 17 if you go to the title game in your league.
And you play a conference championship game? Holy cow. All right, after the break, we'll wrap up this 1980s throwback special. Hasn't this been fun? Stay with us.
BYU Sports Nation is presented by the BYU Store, official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere.
Welcome back for a final time to our BYU Sports Nation special. It's BYU football back to the 80s, part two, another memorable run full of nostalgia as we recap, specifically in this episode, 1984 to 1989, a national championship, finishing up with the emergence of BYU's eventual Heisman Trophy winner, Ty Detmer.
Is BYU going to ever top this decade? I don't think so. National championship and Outland Trophy winners and top three Heisman guys and almost a Heisman coming up in 90. Wow.
It's simple. All you have to do is win 16 games probably and win another national championship.
That's it?
Maybe another Heisman Trophy winner
okay.
in that title season.
Let's do it.
Our thanks to today's guest, the great Robbie Boskill.
Sorry to Dennis, we ran out of time. You were born this decade, though.
Indeed I was. So were you. For Jerem Jordan, I'm Spencer Linton. Shout out to Trevor Maddich. Go Cougs!